views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio, your guide to practical mindfulness and meditation. Join hosts Tim Darter and Steve Kramer and discover how to add the mechanics of meditation to your day. Watch yourself connecting in a whole new way and find the amazing moments in life's routines that often pass us by. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now here's your hosts, Tim Darter and Steve Kramer.
Hi, welcome to Spirit Fire Radio. I'm Tim Darter.
And I'm Steve Kramer. It is a joy to be with you today. We have a really wonderful show in store, and we've been very excited about it. This week on the practice of living awareness, which is Spirit Fire's own meditation practice, all week long, we are meditating on step number 9, which is entitled Mind. So here on Spirit Fire Radio, if you're new to the show, each week we invite a guest on our show that we feel emulates the tool within the meditation practice that we are meditating with that week. So we've got 14 steps and thus 14 weeks. So this week is week number 9, mind. So we're on the second half of the practice of living awareness. The first half is really about establishing peaceful abiding, allowing you to sit in peace, peace within your physical body, your emotional body, your mental body. And as we move into the second half, we are really engaging Vipassana, and we're trying to allow you as a sitter to have a greater understanding of penetrating insight. So when we combine peaceful abiding and penetrating insight, we really are able to live with awareness. This living awareness unfolds. So the mind has got 3 states, and Donna Mitchell-Moniak, who leads our morning meditations online, she's got so much to say about mind. I really would ask you to tune in, and such a treat this week in this step. We talk during this step about the contracted mind, the expanding mind, and the emptying mind. And I won't go too deep into the emptying mind because that would be a year's worth of shows. But we all know the contracting mind, when we contract our mind around an idea and it just doesn't want to seem to budge. And the expanding mind, when we get into the realms of intuition, of inspiration, of creativity. And those two are both very effective, and we use them various points in our days and in our lives to evolve, to help us come to a greater understanding of who we are and where we're going. So on to today's show. A few weeks back, we had Dr. Dorothy Riddle on the show, and we were talking about tip of the nose and focus. And it was a show dedicated to noticing the usually not noticed, which is inherent in that step. And her book, Moving Beyond Duality, offered so much juicy conversation about what happens when we move away from an us versus them mentality, really a this or that. Where is our focus, and how can we notice the usually not noticed? It was a wonderful conversation, so wonderful that we invited Dorothy back. Dorothy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
It is really a pleasure to have you back. And before we get into this conversation, I just want to tell our listeners a little bit about you. Dorothy Riddle is an author, a psychologist, an economic specialist, and the focus of her work is really bridge building. Building bridges of understanding among persons of different cultures, different economic, socioeconomic structures, different faith communities. Her lifetime of contributions to human goodwill, to dignity, to respect, to equality are humbling, to say the very least. She has written an amazing 3-part series of books. There are 3 volumes. It's called Enough for Us All, and that is the name of the series. We were talking about book number 3 in our last conversation, Moving Beyond Duality, and we're going to talk today about her 2nd volume, Positive Harmlessness in Practice. So, Dorothy, when you were here before, I just want to tell our listeners, you know, sometimes because of scheduling, we have got to pre-record shows. And we pre-recorded that show. And as it was aired live, the nation was just coming to grips with the awful violence that took place in Orlando, where we saw a shooter go into a nightclub and murder so many members of the gay community and their friends and loved ones. And it was really just horrific scene, horrific to wake up to that news. And interesting that we had just talked about this us versus them. And is there enough for us all in this world we live in? So I found that that we couldn't not notice that and couldn't not mention that in this show. And since then, just more news of just tremendous, really unthinkable violence around the world. So we're so happy to have you back on today, and so that we can wrap our heads around what's going on with this harm that seems to be pervading our life here on Earth as human beings. How was that as an introduction?
Well, I think you're describing exactly the situation that we're in. And Steve, if I may, I would just like to interject at this point that keeping in mind that we are energetic beings and that what we think, you know, what our minds form shapes our reality, we need to remember that there already are these massive thought forms of hatred and greed and jealousy that you can think of them as like a big thundercloud overlaying our universe because of all of the historic violence that's gone on. And so to me, these events remind us that we cannot just stand idly by and let those thought forms continue to feed into this kind of violence. We have to think about what it is we are going to do. And that's what positive harmlessness is all about.
Mm. And when you say that these thought forms exist and you, we visualize this as a cloud, on the back of the book, it says that within the book, you're discussing the fact that we have no collective experience of harmlessness because our habits of harm are so pervasive. Are they cloudy days for us here on Earth these days, do you feel, or is it sort of passing clouds? You know, I'm curious what your sort of take on that.
Well, I just to expand a bit on the quote that you gave, if you think about your own life, think about what you see on the media, what you read, what you hear from other people, and then examine that from the perspective of harm. I think you'll find that our environment is it's riddled with this kind of harm. Even if you think about, you know, what do people, when they gossip, what do they gossip about? They don't usually gossip about how wonderful somebody else is. You know, they're talking about something that went wrong, some other problem. And as we talked about last time, a lot of this is literally invisible to us because it is so common. We don't even recognize it. We don't even understand the ways in which we harm ourselves and we harm others. So I would say we continue to be immersed in an environment where harm is considered normal. And that's very dangerous for us. That's what we need to fix.
And I wouldn't say that by any means that statement is inaccurate. I know so many of us could even think of asking a friend, how was your day? And often their response is something negative and is something mm-hmm. sort of a, you know, oh, well, if this wouldn't have happened, you know, we realize that we do actually really do default to that sort of cloud, if you will, which interestingly enough distorts the light. I mean, there you have it, you know, when right. and we are constantly living around this negativity, we find it even more hard to connect to that light within. So I love that this book is with us and is available. There are so many wonderful exercises in these books. We mentioned that quite a bit in the last radio show, the effectiveness of these books and the clarity with which you write. So let's go back to harm. I'd love to ask, do you feel we're born free of the intent to harm? you know, is this learned? Are we conditioned? Do we sort of come into this cloudy situation and therefore it's harder for us even to grow and connect to that light because we're not exposed to it? We don't see it as often as the clear sort of the clarity that light brings.
In terms of my understanding as a psychologist, we are born joyous and cooperative. You know, when you, if you're with an infant, yes, they cry. They cry for specific reasons, but they giggle, they laugh. And the research is that, you know, that our natural state of being with each other is cooperative. But that's not what we learn. That's not what we see modeled all around us. And I think it's important for us to remember that this whole issue of harm is very new to humanity. If you look back, it's only in the 1900s that as a society we started to think about what do we agree is harm. And it was in 1945, after the Second World War, that the Nuremberg Principles on crimes against peace, crimes against humanity, war crimes were developed. That's the very first time that humanity sat down and said, what is it that we think is okay and not okay? So we're young in this whole practice of learning what it means to be harmful and harmless.
Wow, it's fascinating. You know, that just gave me chills. To think we're only at the precipice of understanding this word harmlessness, and to have that objectivity to be able to look at ourselves as a whole, as a whole humanity, and set this up. You know, anyone who reads the United Nations Bill of Human Rights cannot help but be moved, but also be moved by its inherent truths to say, this is so simple. And yes, I absolutely want a world that looks and feels this way, and that it should be so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I appreciate your answer. I didn't quite know what I was going to get when I said, are we born this way? And I would agree again that yes, indeed, you think children are born. I've read that children are only born with two fears. That is the fear of loud noises and the fear of falling.
And those we think are inborn in order to be protective in their environment. Right.
Yes,
so they don't
absolutely
tumble off the edge of a cliff, and they don't do that kind of thing. But but when we think about the type of harm that we do to each other, any of you who are around young children, listen to them and you will hear them mimicking what they hear adults say.
Yes.
And if adults are speaking respectfully and with dignity about other people, that's what you'll hear children say. If adults are being demeaning, disrespectful, prejudice, that's what you'll hear children say.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So once this is then learned by children, can it be unlearned? And I mean, that process, boy, for some it must take a lifetime, for some quicker. Can this be unlearned?
Well, it can be unlearned. The challenge for all of us is that we don't have a context in which we experience harmlessness on a regular basis. Some of us may feel that in our homes or in our intimate relationships or in some community that we don't experience that. But that means we would have to remain disconnected from the rest of the world, which isn't realistic. And
yes.
So one of the things that I think is really important for us to remember is that harmlessness is not an absence of harm. Harmlessness is not the absence of harm. It has to be more proactive than that. It has to be the seeing and hearing of the other person, the witnessing their pain and advocating for the change. That is all part of harmlessness, not just stopping doing something.
Yes. Well, you know, I think perhaps this is a good time to ask you a very specific question. So something happened in me with this last event. Well, there have been so many events, but since Orlando, just following Orlando, we saw this really just unspeakable murder of Philando Castile in the St. Paul, Minneapolis area, where this man, by all accounts and purposes, was doing the right thing. He was pulled over for a traffic violation. He was carrying a gun. He basically said to the officer, "I'm carrying a gun." The officer asks him for his ID. He goes to pull it out, and he shot dead in front of his partner, in front of a child, in his own car, doing the right thing. For me personally, something shifted in me. I had up until that point been one of these all lives matters people. I really took offense to people saying Black Lives Matter because I felt it was racist, and to say that Black Lives Matter was racist, and that as soon as you name a race, you are actually separating them, you're putting them in separation, and it's then you are creating an us versus them, because then white lives matter and brown lives matter and yellow lives matter, and how can one matter more than another? So all lives have to matter if we're going to get to the end. But something shifted in me when that happened, and I saw the light, and my heart opened. Actually, my mind expanded, and I saw that actually in this instance, this community suffers in ways that I, as a white male, cannot understand or comprehend. They are different than I am, and indeed, Black lives have got to matter, and we have got to look out at the very special situation of this community and say, indeed, if this man was not Black, I do not think it would have happened in the same way, and thus it is specific to him. So could you just help me out with that? I was in a little bit of a conundrum, and I realized as soon as my mind opened, I realized that it actually was contracted and holding on to the limitation that all lives matter held. I didn't even realize it until I really pondered it, really felt into it. But I was holding on to that in a contracted state, almost in a defensive state. What was I defending there?
Well, I think what you were getting caught in is the tension between the ideal and the actual. Yes, ideally, all lives matter. That's not an incorrect statement. But there's no action implication. There's no implication that we need to do anything. And what we're doing by saying that rather than Black Lives Matter is we're ignoring the actual reality of the harm that is being done to others. We're being dismissive, right? We're allowing that harm and pain to be invisible to us. And we are thereby compounding the harm. And so we're being complicit in creating the harm. And what we need to be able to do is to embrace and witness the full reality of what is the actual in our lives, the complexity of our experience, and use that as momentum to make sure it can never happen again.
Indeed. I hear every word you said, and once again, the hairs on my arm are standing on end. There's something when you're presented with the truth, when you are presented with that lightning bolt that is truth, that it makes your hair stand on end. So I thank you for that. And you know, I must say, I hear the words you say about ignoring and being dismissive. And I sense as you say that to me, and I feel into it, that when we hold on to something negative or something that is a distortion of truth, it takes effort. And I feel that effort in me saying to my friends, don't say Black Lives Matter. You have to say all lives matter. And I'm feeling into that even now as I'm saying it and realizing that I was actually holding on to that. And so this brings up this if I'm rambling, stop me. But this brings up, you know, there's the harmlessness scale. You've created the harmlessness scale, which I've been reading. I've been reading and rereading because, again, there's so much truth here in this scale and in what you've presented here. And dismissiveness is one of the numbers on that scale.
Mm-hmm.
So as I look at the harmlessness scale, and let's tell people, would you mind, in your words, I'd love to hear your words. Could you tell us a bit about the harmlessness scale?
Yes, I would be happy to. And I should just say, this is for those of you who are aware of the homophobia scale that I developed in 1972, which has been used widely and modified for a number of different social situations. I had that scale in mind when I worked on the harmlessness scale, and I had a similar motivation, which is to try to help people understand why it's not okay to just say, for example, all lives matter. So the harmlessness scale goes from the extreme of harm to what I consider the extreme of positive harmlessness. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to go through those eight. Is that okay?
I would love it. I would love it. Please do.
So we start with brutality. This one is real easy, right? This is the physical violence that that occurs when there is no obvious safe haven for somebody to get away from it. But even this category is challenging because there are societies, for example, where certain citizens, often women or children, are considered to be appropriate targets of brutality. Then we have harassment, which is the verbal and psychological violence. And in this, what we're doing is we're thinking of the other person as a thing, a commodity, not a person in their own right. Then we have dismissiveness, which is treating other people as though they're of no account and not taking them seriously. And we do this with ourselves also. We dismiss our own intuitions, our own what we feel should be priorities. Then we have defensiveness. So this is the refusing to admit that the violence has occurred or assuming that the victim asked for it, which is unfortunately a very common dynamic still in domestic violence and rape. So those are the four that are very obviously harm. And so then we come to the fifth step, which is abstention, and this is not being harmful. And so this is the, some people interpret the golden rule as this abstention from harm, but all you're doing is refraining, but you're not doing anything to change the situation or to intervene to prevent harm from happening. Then we have supportiveness. So this is more positive, but this is being supportive in a private capacity. So, you know, we intervene, we console the victim, we express empathy and concern, but we don't do anything publicly or in the larger arena. Then seven is nonviolence. So this is the zero tolerance, you know, for jokes that are harmful or hurtful or the kind of casual harm that can occur, and the intervening to prevent specific harm from happening. But that also is not going to ultimately change things. So then we come to step eight, which I've called advocacy. And this is the committing to transforming the situations that traditionally call for violence and dismantling the structures that hold violence in place. And so that brings us to that third book, The Moving Beyond Duality, because I believe that it is the us-them duality that allows us to be violent. As long as we understand that we are all interconnected energetically, and you are part of me, then if I hurt you, I'm also hurting. I understand that I'm also hurting myself. But if I can see you as distinct and separate, then I am able to initiate harm in a different kind of way, feeling that it might be okay.
Wow, what a scale, Dr. Riddle. It is really something. And as you speak of these, when we get to transforming situations, you know that. There you have it. This situation has got to be transformed. I mean, so many situations have got to be transformed. And I can sense that, you know, as my response to Black Lives Matter was actually quite up there in the harmful scale. I was on the harmful side in my dismissiveness, yet I actually felt that I was correct. So in a sense, on some level, it was a thought form. I mean, I had created this thought form that I was sort of taking refuge in that was, well, I understand this to be harmless. And actually, I just was not quite so aware. It really took this situation to move me very quickly, you know, to supportiveness and then considering advocacy. So I want to go into this more. We're going to go to a break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk about the ways that we might integrate this harmlessness scale into our own lives. And I'd like to talk a bit also about the scale, the riddle scale that you created for homophobia, as that was a part of what we saw in Orlando. And actually, interestingly enough and shockingly enough, even a part of in America, we're talking to Dorothy from Canada, that is a part of the Republican that's a part of their political agenda is this is to recondition, or I've blocked the words. So I'd love to talk about that when we come back as well. So we're going to go to a break and we'll be right back with Dr. Dorothy Riddle.
There are so many resources out there for meditation, but did you know that Atana's Heart Earth Healing Meditation is available for you for free? Yes, that's right. You can receive this free healing meditation today from Atana Vadili. All you need to do is visit his website, atanamethod.com. That's ATANAMethod.com, and sign up. You will receive your free meditation instantly. That's atanamethod.com.
Artie Hoffman is the hottest psychic with the warmest heart and the host of the hit show Angels and Answers. A renowned psychic, medium, spiritual life coach, and an entertaining motivational speaker, Artie has helped over 15,000 people with his amazing intuitive gifts, his passion, and his humor. Call 877-ANGEL-02 to schedule a personal reading or to have your own psychic Artie party. That's 877-ANGEL-02. And visit ArtieHoffman.com and Angels and Answers on Facebook.
Hi, I'm Tim Darter.
And I'm Steve Kramer.
Join us on Spirit Fire Radio. Discover how to add the mechanics of meditation to your day.
And watch yourself connect in a whole new way. Find the amazing moments in life's routines that often pass us by. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio.
Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. for your weekly guide to practical mindfulness. And to learn more, visit www.spiritfireradio.com.
Get into it for 2016. Do you want more prosperity, clarity, energy, and balance in your life? Join Lynn Brown now for one of her amazing workshops, each focusing on a key part of living your best life. For more information and to register for one of these amazing workshops, visit lynnbrownevent.com. That's lynnbrownevent.com. And get into it this 2016 with Lynn Brown.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, this is Leslie Fontaine, and my show is Sheer Alchemy on TransformationTalkRadio.com. When we're bogged down with our emotions, the hardships that plague us in our relationships, at work, our finances, we literally can't see the higher plane where we could be operating from. Tune in to Leslie Fontaine, Sheer Alchemy on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
back to Spirit Fire Radio, where this week we're speaking with Dorothy Riddle.
It's been such an intriguing conversation already. We are talking about positive harmlessness in practice. That is the title of Volume 2 of Dorothy Riddle's 3-book series, Enough for Us All. If you are interested in looking at these books, at reading about them, enoughforusall.com talks about the principles of these books and everything that this amazing body of work that Dr. Dorothy Riddle is putting forward. So welcome back, Dorothy.
Thank you.
So before
I just want to correct one thing, Steve, from before the break. I am a U.S. citizen. I was born in Chicago. I'm actually a dual citizen. So this election is my election.
Yes, it seems to be a global election. There seems to be so many points that are shocking us all, making us all really reflect on who are we as a humanity and what direction do we want to go. Again, who would think that this conversation could be, you know, could have even again gotten that much more relevant in the weeks since we talked about us versus them and that we talked about a moving beyond duality? We hear so much from this political campaign that really polarizes us. And this conversation, I feel, is so necessary right now, and it's just gonna this political season is just gonna get more intense. I hate to say it, but I get the sense that it's gonna get that much more intense. So, what do we do?
Well, you know, this is we are in an environment where what I described before in terms of the thought forms, you know, holding violence and greed and anger and jealousy in place, where we have a political figure leading a political party that is directly feeding into that in a very public medium, basically saying it's just fine to be harmful. It's okay to discriminate. You can call other people whatever you want from a public platform. And so to me, what that means is that we have to take very seriously how it is that we break down that thought form, how we dissipate the thought form without feeding extra energy into it.
And, you know, it's so rare. Again, as you say, that it's so pervasive that if anybody's been watching, you know, Tim and I have been watching. We watched both the Republican and the Democratic conventions, and there was a moment when the young senator from New Jersey, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he gave a really wonderful speech and presentation, and immediately the next day, Trump reacted with the most hateful response, basically saying, if this is the next guy for the Democrats, I feel sorry for them. He's the worst. And I know – oh, Cory Booker, I believe is his name. I know him better than he knows himself. And once again, your mouth drops open. You're just shocked by the abrasiveness and the separation. And if you've got a heart, you know, your heart sort of breaks for us all. But his response was he was with two CNN folks and he laughed and he smiled and he said, I'm just going to send him love. And they said, what? And he said, I love this guy. I love that he's talking about me. I'm just going to love on him all I can. I'm going to hold him in my heart. I'm going to hold him in my prayers. I'm going to wish him the best. And, you know, I don't believe he knows me at all if he would say this about me. And it was his response was so shocking and so pure. And it seemed to be heartfelt. It seemed to be truthful. And is that – I don't believe that's all it can take, you know? Is that dismissiveness?
No. And I'm going to make a comment that may surprise you. But I don't agree with that approach because the thing that we forget – is that when we put out loving energy, we are putting out energy that can be used in any way the receiving party wishes to. And we need to be extremely careful. Now, 90% of the time, I would agree with approach but like this. But I think in this case, if we want to be helpful to somebody, that we need to shield the rest of the country from Trump and those kinds of comments. So that's a different kind of approach where if you, again, this is using the mind in a particular way. The mind can create an enveloping shield. And in this kind of case, if I were asked, I would say what you want is a shield that is lined with silver, like a mirror. So whatever he says comes back to him. If he says positive things, he gets that back. If he says negative things, he gets that back. But he begins to have to deal energetically with the consequences of his actions.
Very, very astute answer. And I do like exactly what you said. And it led that I asked myself as I was sort of as I've been reading this book and I was sort of trying to come to terms with my own dismissiveness. I wondered, is this putting his head in the sand? Is this effective? Is this actually a call to action? And where and when is that necessary? So I appreciate your answer very much. To the listeners, In Positive Harmlessness in Practice, in Dr. Riddle's book, she gives in the back there are harmlessness scale questions. And it is so interesting to go through these questions, Dorothy, just to say I've gone through all of them. I haven't actually taken the test. I want to sit down with Tim. I want us to do it together. Because I think it would be a very interesting experience and we just haven't carved out that time yet. But both of us have read through all of the questions. Would you mind if I just gave the listeners an example?
Not at all.
Okay. And I really haven't prepared one but I'm just going to kind of close my eyes and find one.
How about if I read one?
Oh, I would love it. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Let's do.
Okay. So I'm going to choose the one about going on to a flight because many of us do air travel.
I love that one. So Dorothy, may I just interrupt? Just for one second, I want to let the listeners know the reason I wanted to go here with this scale is it really offers you options. You know, it is only when we can really observe ourselves that we've got options and options give us leverage in our observation, correct? And as I've read through all of these multiple choice, how would I respond to this question? You pose a situation and you say, answer honestly, how would you respond? Not what you think is the best answer, because we all can read through these and learn very quickly, oh, I'm getting it. But how would I respond? And it allows one to really be in a place of observation, which, for instance, as I was watching this guy's response to Donald Trump, I was doing it from a place of observation with, well, what's happening in this situation? And I believe that's when we really affect change. So go on. I just wanted to set this up a little bit as to why we're going there. So
sure. So the scenario is you are waiting to board a flight whose aircraft was delayed inbound, and you notice that the gate security screener is pulling aside only passengers with dark hair and dark complected skin. You say, and here are your four options. Option one, nothing, because they haven't pulled you aside. Second option, when you hear a complaint from somebody else, hey, they're just doing their job. Third option, when you hear a complaint from someone else, hey, keep quiet, do you want to delay us further? Fourth option, to the airline check-in staff. Could you give me contact information so that I can write to airport security? This passenger selection process doesn't seem fair to me.
Very different energy to each one of those responses. Especially number two. I find that to be interesting. The second one you mentioned, which is, hey, they are just doing their job. Isn't it interesting that word, hey, how that becomes a sort of counter? It almost is a place of leverage. Like, hey, watch yourself. you know, if somebody else is complaining that, hey, is to put them in to stop them. And, you know, I don't want to make this whole show about like, let's all talk about Trump any more than we need to, but it seems we need to. And so many of the responses we hear to him have that defensiveness of, hey, stop right there. Because one could say, in a sense, there could be a vibration of they're just doing their job that has a little less, it seems, intentional harm than a, hey, they're just doing their job. So it's interesting how each word plays a part of that vibration. And so could you tell us a bit more, like tell us about doing nothing and they haven't pulled you aside?
Well, that's that whole not getting involved, right? Because what you're doing is you're saying, I don't have any responsibility to change this scenario. I don't have any responsibility to move the world towards harmlessness. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to look at my own self-interest.
Yeah. And might I just add one, you know, we've all been there where we've seen somebody say, well, that guy looks like a terrorist. I'd pull him over too. I actually respected that you left that one out. But there you have, you know, would that be considered brutality or harassment?
Well, I think it's more psychological. So I would think of it as harassment.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether it's spoken out loud or not, it's that kind of attitude.
And I want to ask you in harassment, and I'm backtracking a little bit. You had mentioned the word treating others as commodities. Mm-hmm. Could you explain that a little bit?
Well, I think if you look at the literature on harm, and you look at the way in which we're harmful to each other, basically what we do in order to be harmful, we have to make that person an other. We have to, and in that process, what we're doing is we are depersonalizing them. We're making them a non-person. And so in extreme situations, you know, when you see extreme brutality, you'll see that before it happens that people are, for example, stripped of their clothes or their heads are shaved or they're treated in some kind of way where they don't seem to be people anymore. So they become an object. And once they're an object, you know, like your pen, well, you can do whatever you want to with the pen.
I see. So I then go back. I know I'm meandering quite a bit, but this conversation just leads me all over the place because it's so juicy. This leads me then to the policeman who took these four shots at a young man who was completely innocent in every regard. You realize that in no way did he see himself in Philando Castile, and that you mentioned that earlier, that we've got to see ourselves in one another. I mean, that is the answer. I mean, it is the bottom line. This is the answer. Till we see ourselves in one another, and as we would care for ourselves, we would care for another. You mentioned in the book that basically, and you detail it, you say basically every religious or spiritual tradition has harmlessness at its core, and it comes down to, in a variety of wordings, that do unto others as one would have done unto themselves. And so until we reach that point, you know, he was being seen as a commodity, actually. He was being seen as a group, as not being human or not being as an equal, just assumed that he was not law-abiding, he was dangerous, and he should be taken down at any moment.
And he was being – I mean, the officer clearly was acting out of fear.
Yes.
And so that's part of the root cause that we have to – you know, fear is attached to and strengthened by that negative thought form that we've talked about before. I wonder, Steve, if you would mind if I went over the principles that actually are who we are, because that's part of, I think, what we have to get to if we're going to change this.
I would love that, though each and every one of those principles gives me more goosebumps, so please do.
Okay. Okay. So these actually come from my, are developed in my first book, Principles of Abundance for the Cosmic Citizen. And there are two sets of principles. All of this is based on scientific research. If you're interested, I've been very careful in all three of these books to not put in things that are just things that I feel or think, but, you know, to look to make sure that there's support for it. So we have these principles from quantum physics and from biology and the social sciences. The principles that underlie our reality, the first, interconnectivity. We are all interconnected energy waves. We are actually, by essence, energy, and we are all connected to each other, and whatever we do does in some form affect everyone else. Second principle.
Dorothy, do you mind if I just if we just frame this perhaps a little bit around this situation? Because the very fact that we are interconnected energy, when a policeman holds the energy of fear, no good can come of that. We've got to create an environment where they are not fearful to put on their uniform and go out to serve the community. And we all now are in a greater state of fear after that was made an example of. So again, right. All interconnected. So yeah. I won't do this with everyone. Don't worry. But
that's okay. But just notice yourself, you know, those of you that are listening to this conversation, notice how you can pick up on the energy of somebody else. How if somebody is very fearful, it becomes more difficult for you not to be fearful.
Exactly.
As an example. So the second principle is participation. We create our own reality, and there are some really interesting experiments that show that what somebody thinks is going to happen actually affects the outcome. The third is nonlinearity. We think of our experience in linear terms, past, present, and future, but in fact, our experience is fundamentally all happening at the same time. And there's some very interesting ramifications of that that could be a topic for a whole other conversation. Yeah. Then the fourth principle, non-duality, which we've referred to several times in this conversation and also the previous interview that I was privileged to participate in. So our reality is much more complex than just two parts. Then we have three principles that govern how we coexist with each other. The first of these is interdependence. We are part of a community of life, and that actually includes not just humans, but also non-human persons, the earth, this whole community of life. Then we have adaptability. We survive because of our ability to adapt and collaborate. And that's linked to the final one, cooperation. We evolve through symbiosis and cooperation. The whole image that's been labeled as Darwinian of, you know, the strongest survives in competition is the basis. That's not actually the way life works. It's not actually the way life has evolved on this earth. So we have a lot of myths to dispel, and that's part of what stands in our way of experiencing the reality that we are all part of one cosmic energy field.
Amazing. What a really just groundbreaking, almost a revelation to hear you speak of these principles. I don't want to keep going back to this, but I would say that what was interesting and I think where this had a transformative effect on myself was that it did seem in, again, the instance of Mr. Castile, that he understood some of these principles. He was living by them. Participation, you know, he had a license for his gun. He told the officer, "I'm carrying a gun. I just want to let you know." That's cooperation. Adaptability, you know, he seemed to he was going somewhere, coming home from the grocery store. He pulled over. You can see in each one of these principles that it seemed he was living by these principles. And that's, I think, where we all see okay, well, here is a black life that simply did not matter because it was not it was not engaged in a way that was even human. It was really a part of our coexisting reality. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the scale, you know, how do we get this harmlessness scale to the masses? You know, Tim and I were watching the news quite a bit as all of this was happening, and as we have been lately, and wondering, you know, how can we get these three volumes of literature on the desk of politicians and policemen and Do you feel optimistic that this type of work that you've done is being done and is getting out there and is integrating into the system? And if not, what do we do? How do we get you a cape and superhero powers to have you fly these books into every single office and training program? How do we do it? What's going on?
I'm not sure. It's been an interesting process for me because I've had in many ways over the years, you know, a very public life. I've been recognized in a number of different fora, but for these particular books, they've won awards, book awards, and individuals tell me that the books are very meaningful to them. But it has been challenging to try to get these messages out in a broader context, and I do believe that, which is why I spent time writing these, that these are the things that we need to be thinking about. These are the things that we need to be understanding. These are the principles that we need to be using and working together. And I would be delighted to know how to help move that forward. I don't know.
Well, may it be so. And I really appreciate your honesty there in saying that indeed it has been difficult. And it is, as you say, the clouds persist. You know, try selling sunscreen on a cloudy day. Mm-hmm. You know, I hear you there. Certainly, I'm so pleased that we can bring you on as a guest, and I have certainly recommended each one of these books. It's interesting. I've been reading them from volume 3 to volume 2, and I have yet to get to Abundance. The first title is The Principles of Abundance for the Cosmic Citizen. I don't know why that happened. That I must have read volume 3 so many times. And so, to the listeners, once again, I just want to let them know Enough for Us All. This is a 3-volume set by Dr. Dorothy Riddle. And again, you can find out more about Dorothy and more about this series at enoughforusall.com. Dorothy, we are approaching the end of this show. It's gone so fast. I really appreciate all that you've offered. And once again, I simply cannot say how indebted I feel we are all as a humanity to your contributions. Listen, as a gay man, I can tell you that your contributions to doing all that you can to see that equality and respect and dignity is restored, you know, to in places that it's lacking. It's just a heartfelt gratitude to you for all the work you do.
You're welcome.
So, Dr. Dorothy Riddle, please check it out, Enough for Us All. Dorothy, we're going to have you back once more, yes?
Yes, I'd be delighted. Please invite me.
You have got 3 books, and I feel like we're going to move to Principles of Abundance on the 3rd. And so it's been a wonderful sort of 3-part series. So listeners, listen, have a look at spiritfireradio.com. I believe it's in 3 weeks. Dr. Riddle will be back with us. It's been a real treat, and we thank you so much for all you do.
You're very welcome, and thank you very much for having me on.
Well, we look forward to chatting with you again on our next show. So thanks again, everybody. We will be back next week with another show on Spirit Fire Radio.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to meditation and living with awareness. Join hosts Tim Darter and Steve Kramer and discover the ways that consciousness is being cultivated in everyday life. Connect to your day in a whole new way and find the amazing moments in life's routines that often pass us by. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more about Spirit Fire, visit spiritfireradio.com.